Talk shoes.
Recorded live.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, guys. This is Rick. Sorry I'm late. It is Monday, November the 29th, and this is the Q&A call for the subscription site. So we've got several questions we want to get going on today.
Can we read them? I'm here today.
You want to read today, Aaron? Feel free
I'm
if
here.
You'd like to read.
I'm here.
I got
sure.
it. Okay, go for it.
So this one is called When Do You Just Move On?
Okay. Actually, why don't we, just because of the thing, why don't you let me keep doing so just so it'll be consistent in the future. So they'll
right.
always be reading it. Okay.
Okay,
husband,
then I'm going to go and do other stuff.
Okay.
So Amanda, talk to you later, and Rick,
bye.
Talk to you later too. Bye, guys.
Okay. My husband, the unfaithful, has been sober from drugs and alcohol for years. Discovery of this affair was 18 months ago, but disclosure just trickled out at first, then stopped altogether. He admitted some lies about the affair during the marriage counseling session this past May. I feel like he told me because I was getting frustrated and not sure if I could do this anymore. He's been sober of the body but not of the mind and was looking at porn again. Watching not so good shows on TV, looking at bikinied women on the computer while sober, but swears that he had an affair that meant nothing, a proposition to woman on Craigslist, had many memberships on porn sites because he was not sober, and the addiction to them made him into something or someone that he was not, and clouded his judgment. I do believe this is part of the problem. I do not believe that he's being completely honest with me and think that he's hiding behind his addiction at that time and his I don't remember because it meant nothing when he answered in the past. But now that he's working so hard to become sober of body, mind, and spirit through the 12th step and a new relationship with God with the help of our pastor, I'm dealing with a new man. I want to really have him tell me what happened during our entire relationship so that I don't have doubts or put walls up so high from fears of his dishonesty. He wants to leave it all in the past and move on. He does not want to keep rehashing things. I don't either. I want to fall in love with a man that trusts me, to know him and the painful truth. That truths that are blocking us. I think the pain of truth is essential for true growth. He thinks that moving on is best for the relationship. I think this is like a house with problems. You have to take it down to the studs, then fix everything behind the walls before closing them back up to make a newer, better working house. He stopped wanting to go to marriage counseling only after 4 months because he wanted to focus on his recovery first. That was 4 months ago. I've been working the Al-Anon steps, program steps, and learning about myself too, and am reading about boundaries in marriage. Do you think that since I have not worked on the affair and other betrayals and lies with a really sober man, is it wrong to want to now, even if it's a repetitive work, with someone who claims that they want to do whatever it takes to make them the best marriage ever? I just want to grow old with him, but I have to know him to trust him and have true intimacy. I trust God to guide him, but I'm not sure how to approach this. Thank you. Man, I think so many people have this particular problem, and I really appreciate your question. The reality is, what you're going through is incredibly painful, and I feel horrible that you're in the place where you're at. And I certainly, hope that he's able to come across someone in the future who can help him understand a little bit of what your journey is through this process. I would agree with you that it is important to be able to talk about the relationship and to rehash it maybe multiple times. It's very fascinating how people physiologically heal, and much of it's about developing a common story where they have a shared way of seeing their history. And without that, it's almost like the pain is never fully resolved simply because it's somewhat fragmented. The story remains incoherent. And as long as the story is incoherent in our mind, if it's not kind of this nice contiguous storyline that it all makes sense to us, it's at one level it's like we can't fully process it and lay the pain down. And I think that when you talk about people like your husband, that's something that they don't understand. You know, not meaning to overgeneralize, but I think that men typically will do the thing where they want to compartmentalize and not think about it, and that's how they avoid the pain. There's something incredibly healthy, though, about going ahead, going back, processing, looking at it, and addressing it. And he may not understand this, but even in his life, the not carrying through with that, not going through the process of, I think, talking about it, rehashing it with you, maybe multiple times, so you come up with a common experience of all of this stuff, it still comes out sideways in our lives farther down the line. It still has an impact even on him in the ways at times that he'll respond to other people who make accusations if they hit a point of shame. You know, I always say, you know, my mate can never make me feel a certain way, or people can never make me feel ashamed. People certainly have the ability, however, to hit shame that is existent within me. And much of the healing that comes as we work through issues like shame and guilt actually happen in the context of relationship. They don't happen just because I choose not to think about it, or I kind of shove it underwater and pretend it doesn't exist. I mean, eventually, if you have enough points of kind of dishonesty where you haven't been able to, you know, things you're ashamed of, where you're not happy maybe with how you've been, or with resentments that you hold toward other people. It's like you've got all of these tennis balls, and everyone's a tennis ball. So you've got now 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 or 30 tennis balls you're all trying to hold underwater at the same time. And eventually things begin to pop to the surface and cause problems. And oftentimes I think that it's a lack of understanding, somebody really not helping him understand what it takes to work through the marriage. My second concern when somebody's not willing to just, I think, be honest and share and talk about it is, you know, a lack of empathy. In a sense, I hope that, you know, he'll listen to you and hear your side and understand where you come from and what that experience was like for you. But as a warning or caveat, I would say his experience may not be your experience. And this is really where I think couples begin to have problems when it comes to conflict intimacy, or that difference intimacy. When you have very different perceptions of what the history of the relationship was, it doesn't mean that one of you's right and one of you's wrong. It actually is far more about you experience the same thing, but the experience was may have well been totally different for both of you. And conflict intimacy isn't about being able to necessarily see it the same way, but it's always knowing that the other person fully understands how I see it. It's not about a common vision at one level or a common understanding, but it's about feeling understood by the other person, and that your reality is appreciated by them and not discounted by them. Because without that affirmation, I think it becomes incredibly difficult for us and very frightening. So hopefully he will have somebody tell him that, you know, there's benefit in continuing to work through these things. And that would be, you know, in the long run, my prayer for you both. So let's see. Next question here. Going back down. 1 year anniversary. Second. So 1 year anniversary. This week is the 1 year anniversary of my finding out about my husband's long-term, many year emotional, somewhat physical affair, no intercourse according to him. And I don't know how to handle the horrible days I'm still having with him. I'm still with him, and he says this is what he truly wants, but the affair went on for so many years, and he was so distant emotionally and cruel on a regular basis that I'm still having difficult time getting past those memories of those years and of the mistreatment and of his not loving me, but always thinking he was in love with the other woman and just staying with me because he didn't believe in divorce. For example, we went on a trip this past weekend with some of our adult children who planned the trip and just wanted us to go. It was the same place we had gone to as a family 3 years ago. We went to an amusement park one day, which we did on the first trip, and I cried the entire day because all I could think about was that when we were there before, he just wanted to be there with the other woman. I said that to him, and he didn't deny that was the way he thought about it and what he wanted when we were there before. It is like this with all of my memories of anything during those 20-plus years of his affair. How am I supposed to handle this week and the next few weeks? At this time, a year later, after I found out that he was still saying he loved the other woman, he wouldn't notice. He would not say he loved me and also said some very hurtful things. He even went to the hotel 3 days to figure out what he felt. This was even after the other woman called him and told him she had no feelings for him and never wanted to see or hear from him again. What will make the next 2 or 3 weeks in the holidays bearable? And thank you very much for writing that in. You know, I think that some of it is grieving. You know, when people say, how long does it take to get past an affair? I think the length actually has a lot to do with it. It's obviously the pain created by a one-night stand may be as acute as the pain created by a 20-year affair or by pornography or whatever, but somebody who's has been involved in an affair for decades, 16, 20 years, 20 plus years, the amount of material that you have to process and the number of potential reminders and just memories are so much more. And so I do think that it makes it very difficult. So first off, I want you to know you're not crazy. And I think that in terms of one thing you can do is write down how you want to be able to respond. How do you choose to respond when these things come? And decide what you want your path to be. What type of role do you want to play in responding to that? What type of, if we look at your life as a story and you have a character, how is your character responding to the tragedy that's occurred? Because it is most definitely a tragedy. And how would you like your character to be able to respond in the story of your life? One of the things that I would recommend after you do that is that you get a piece of paper that you keep with you, and every time the painful memories come, try to write down what is it that triggered the memory or triggered the pain. What was the thought? And then look and see if, you know, there is a lie involved. Write down what's the lie, and then on the other side of the paper, write down, you know, what is the truth? Because I think frequently you can go, I feel this way, but I know this. And our feelings don't necessarily always reflect truth. And I think the problem with the way we cognitively deal with thoughts in our mind when those triggers come and those emotions flood, and those emotions are real. I'm not saying that you shouldn't even have them. I mean, I think anybody would have them. But if we sit there and say, look, I know that he's chosen to be with me and he's getting his act together, but I still feel blah, blah, blah. Well, at that point, when you put the but in the middle of the sentence, you literally, you know, discount everything that came in front of the but. So a great technique is to reverse the order of that sentence. I feel this, but I know the truth. And then you write the truth on the other side of the paper. And with a but in the middle between the feeling comes first and what you're feeling, and then, but, what's the truth? Don't operate just simply off the feelings, but begin to look at realities. Begin to recount places of miracles over the past year as a reminder. And I think that's a powerful thing to do. Places where you've seen God move, places where you've begun to see changes that God is doing, almost like building an Ebenezer, you know, that there comes a point in time that I know that he's trying to do something. I would hope that someone's helping your husband know how to respond well when you're struggling, that he can be present for you and he still allows you to talk and he still tries to understand, that he still tries to help by being honest with you. And because I think that's also going to be an important part of your healing. And if he's doing that, I think you'll find that that will help to some extent. But you do need him, I think, to be able to listen and let you process. And it's still part about you trying to work out, as I was talking about in the earlier situation, you're still trying to figure out the story and what is that story. And because it may still seem too incoherent to you. It may still not be consistent. And that's where the trauma lives. And hopefully over time, a new story is formed. I know that people who walk through this thing, I think, begin to see amazing, over time, victories and begin to see how loss can be transformed into something amazing that you never would have imagined. It's too early for that. We're still grieving right now. But at least in that grieving, try to see God. Try to understand at one level there's going to be meaning from this, that from this ashes, from these ashes, life will come, and live in that hope. And as you go through the holiday, so live in the hope that God is going to transform the loss. Begin to, you know, capture the feelings and then write down what is the truth. Don't always believe the feeling. Make a list of all the victories and the things you've seen that have been miracles just this year. And know that this isn't the end of the journey. It will be a painful season. Grieving is grieving. Find someone else besides him that you can talk to who doesn't mind just being with you while you talk. Your talking about it will be huge. And hopefully that will help you get through the season. I know it's incredibly difficult. So, next question. Making decisions a year out from discovery. Shouldn't I be able to make a firm decision by now on whether I want him to stay with me or move out? Shouldn't I know by now a year out? I'm on two antidepressants. I still cry a lot. Some days I want him to leave, and the next day I will think I want to keep working on our marriage and not save it. What's wrong with me? Previously, I worked in business in a fairly high-level position for many years and used to be able to make quick but correct decisions and stand by them. Help. Trauma is so difficult to deal with. And I, first off, don't be hard on yourself. Please, please be patient with yourself. I mean, there are so many people who wouldn't even be standing at this point. So I know you have to be an incredibly strong individual to have survived everything you've gone through. I mean, to me, it is amazing that you're still hanging in there. I think that it's difficult until the pain begins to subside to make the decisions. And depending on the level of trauma, it takes longer for some people than others. I've known some people that it's like that kind of emotional flood didn't begin to subside for 16 months, for 18 months, for 24 months. It just took a long time. And when you've got 20 years of material to process, I certainly don't think that you're going to be able to get over and get through everything in just a year. The other thing is, if you were able to get through the pain and had done well, and if you had seen him consistent, you know, being consistent, you might be at a place where you can make a decision in 1 year. But, you know, there's not a hard and fast timeline. And sometimes what happens has a more profound impact on some people than others. And sometimes it depends on how we were raised, our childhood experiences. There are a lot of factors that determine how we work through this. You may still be trying to even figure out the story. So, you know, that would be natural. You'll find that yo-yo of wanting to stay and wanting to leave, that's incredibly common. If he's truly being intimate and real and transparent with you, then there will be moments that you feel more connected with him probably than you've ever felt before and want to be with him. At points of time, though, when the pain is so overwhelming, there may be parts of you that are just totally going, just run. You just feel like a fool for even being there. And it's almost like we have our own civil war within ourselves when that sort of thing begins to happen. And, you know, again, all I can say is please be patient. You're still working through a great deal. I am so sorry. None of this is fair. This is the situation you're in right now is incredibly unfair. And I know, especially at the holiday time, to have this be your 1 year anniversary has got to be excruciatingly painful. I just hope and pray that, you know, you will be able to find some peace. Again, as I said in the previous question, try hard to stay focused on things that are good, on things above, not on earthly things, on who you are. I think you've mentioned maybe you're working Al-Anon. Take good care of yourself. Be kind to yourself. Go out for walks. Look for things where there's beauty. Try to find life. And enjoy the things you can enjoy right now, but try to find beauty in small things. Sometimes even looking at art or something like that can be helpful. So I hope that gives you a few suggestions of things that that might help as you go through this. But you're not crazy not being able to make a decision yet. Many people would not have been able to work through all of that at this point. Next. Still not being totally truthful with me. My husband, the unfaithful one, is not being totally truthful to me, even about just everyday normal things. He will try to sneak around and do things without telling me. He'll answer my questions very specifically as to evade telling me what he knows I'm asking. And if I catch him, then he'll look sheepish and admit what he was doing. He wants to stay to say he's not lying, since he's answering the very narrow part of the question, even though he admits he realizes that what I wanted to know, and he didn't tell me, but misled me into thinking I knew everything. He doesn't see how this is a form of lying. He still doesn't get it that in doing this, he's keeping secrets from me, which is infidelity. Nothing I say to him convinces him that he's still being dishonest with me. But things like this, which occurred again this past weekend, which was the one-year anniversary of our discovery, just make me feel all over again that I can't trust him. I've worked hard for this past year trying to save our marriage and to learn and to trust him again. And then he does things like this, which totally eliminate any progress. He acts like a child who sneaks around to see how much he can put over on the authorities, parents, etc. And I think he gets a thrill when he can. I even think this was part of his infatuation with the other woman and his sneaking around with her. He even admitted during the year after discovery that he found it exciting because it was forbidden. Is there hope for real trust with someone like this? I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know what he is or he isn't trying to do. And, you know, I would certainly want to be able to hear his perspective. You know, I think there's always hope. And it depends a lot on what he's doing, I think, in his own recovery. That's the part I really don't know. If I've got somebody who's trying to learn to be honest and they've never been honest all their life, I always expect, to some extent, people to struggle initially with something. But I also want to see a great deal of brokenness, a desire to be different, a desire to change, a desire to continue pressing on, trying to be honest, a desire to be around other people that help them to do that, looking to set up ways to do better at that. It's almost like it's an internal desire on their part to change the behavior. If there's not that motivation in him, it's going to make it extremely difficult, I think, for you to be able to feel safe. I mean, I don't even know that you're safe if his heart, it really isn't to be changing and addressing some of those issues. Again, having not talked to him, I don't know what's going on with him. But I certainly know that you would need him to be amazingly consistent. If you've ever read the article that I wrote called The Shocking Truth About Trust, one of the points is in order to begin to trust another person, if you want to gain trust, the first place you start is by trusting them with the information, trusting that they'll be able to do something with that information. So anyway, I hope that he will begin to anyway, that he'll get the help he needs to be able to get better. So, but he needs to be truthful. And I don't see hardly how you can go forward if he can't be truthful. That would make it really, really difficult. How can I be sure? Let's see, that's our next question here. So, how can I be sure? Several recommended books by well-known authors that I have read recently have stated that for emotional affairs, especially those that were never consummated with intercourse, if the two partners see each other again, even years later, the old infatuation flames up immediately, and it is as if they were never apart. My husband says that he and his affair partner never had sex, even though he tells me that he doesn't feel anything romantic for her now. How will I ever know if I could still be second choice if he has the opportunity to get back with her in the future? I don't want to stay with him if this is what would happen. This makes me feel that I'm still second choice and that he's just staying with me until they can be together again. If he's not totally and completely over her, then to me, this marriage is really a sham and not the relationship I want. If the professional Christian counselors say this, how can I not believe it? Should I insist that he and I visit the city where she now lives and go to the church she and her husband attend and see how he reacts? He says he doesn't want to do this, but maybe he's still just afraid of what his reaction will say about his true feelings. You know, again, this is a really fascinating particular question. I mean, to me, I always believe that affairs end unilaterally, not bilaterally. I would agree that the attachments that are formed in affairs in any relationship still exist and could immediately flame up. In my opinion, the reason that a sexual affair, one with intercourse or whatever, may be easier to end is simply because it was more sexual in nature, not as relational in nature. It may not have been as much about that attachment. Not sure. But I certainly think that people can have made a decision and totally ended a relationship and still have that attachment or that draw for the other person, even though they have no intention or desire ultimately to do that. I wrote about this last week, but it's funny how God himself put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden. I mean, he actually created a second choice, a way that we could choose something other than him that must have been appealing for whatever reason to Adam and Eve. And I think for us, even after I personally surrendered my life to God, there was still a part of me that wanted what I wanted in spite of, you know, my surrender to God, even though I know in my heart what I really want is I know how I want to be. It's what Paul talked about in Romans chapter 7. The things I want to do, I don't. The things I don't want to do, I do. If I do the things I don't want to do, it's not even me doing it anymore. It's sin in me that does it. So I think there's always going to be a part of us that's drawn to something different. I think you could go to the church. I think that he would feel something. But just because I feel something doesn't mean that's what I want. Just because you can trigger a craving in me doesn't mean that's what I really want. If I'm driving home today and see a sign for the Bluebell drumsticks, I can tell you immediately I might start having a craving for a Bluebell drumstick. That doesn't mean that I really want a Bluebell drumstick. I mean, I can tell you right now I don't want to eat a Bluebell drumstick. It's not how I want to be eating. It's not what I want to be doing. At the same time, at that moment, something could be triggered in me. And the thing about cravings and the way you know that cravings are not about love is they're very specific. They get focused and kind of obsessed on one particular thing. That's a craving. That's not love. It's something very different. And again, he may have that. He may not have that. I don't know. Never worked with him. But what's important to me if I were talking to him is what's his decision, you know? What's he chosen at this point? And why has he chosen that? And, you know, I always tell people when I'm working with them, I don't even recommend that they try to choose the marriage at all or even try to save the marriage. To me, you know, they need to choose God and try to do what God's telling them to do. Because I don't know that they're going to be able to do it on their own anyway. And so he just needs to learn how to love. And hopefully, over time, he'll begin to do that. That he'll begin to think of somebody besides himself. Let's see. So the next question. Can you explain how a sex addict who was abused as a child and given many hurtful messages from family and peers of his unworthiness can turn into a sex addict that uses sex as a self-punishment and self-fulfilling prophecy? My spouse says he felt like he was doomed and hopeless every time he used to have sex or masturbate. He describes it in a way that he had to prove that he was unlovable and worthy and hopeless. I try to not see his affair from my point of view, which means I would have to believe that he never felt like having sex with his AP. He was never even turned on by her. Can you explain how you can do something so twisted to yourself? It's easy to understand being attractive or lustful and getting addicted to this behavior, but understanding that my spouse was having an affair as a way to make himself as unlovable as possible, how do you understand that? Especially where there's been trauma, there is a condition that we call someone being abuse reactive, and in a sense, because of the shame that someone holds, the way they self-soothe is really through negative reinforcement, not positive reinforcement. They do the thing ultimately that causes them to loathe themselves because at least it feels consistent. And so they continually set themselves up to almost recreate trauma they've experienced before in their background. And it never really makes, I think, a lot of sense to someone who's never done it. But when someone is abuse reactive, I think I've said this on other calls, they'll go one of two ways. They'll either become the perpetrator, or they can become, they'll continue to put themselves back in the situation where they recreate the shame that they've taken on. And I think for somebody who's not abuse reactive, that is a very strange and foreign concept. And I can understand why it doesn't make a lot of sense to people. But it's almost like an imprinting that occurred and they're just repetitively redoing that thing over and over and over. And then with the core belief that, you know, if you really knew me, it's almost like you can never really let anybody know what you've become and who you've become. And how you abuse yourself as well as how you abuse other people and use other people is just a compulsion, and that an itch that has to be scratched. And I fear that's probably not going to fully answer that question for you. But that's the only way I kind of know to understand it. Going back and reading some, I think, in a book I've mentioned before, which is Parenting from Within, may give you some good insights about the physiological aspects that create that. Next question. Continuing affairs. Is it possible someone can start an affair and only continue because they are afraid to stop for the fear of the AP contacting the spouse? My spouse said even though he wasn't feeling attracted, once he cheated, he felt like he had to continue the relationship because his affair partner wanted him to leave and many times even made comments and threatening to contact me. My spouse said that he kept in contact in a way to try to control the affair so that he wouldn't lose me. That one, I can say, absolutely, that is possible. And again, I know it may sound totally insane and crazy, and at one level I'll tell you, it is a little bit insane and crazy, but I know that in you know, my situation, the one thing that was not optional in my life was people finding out what was going on. I did everything within my power to keep things from coming into the light because I was afraid of being exposed for who I really was. And in fact, I think I've mentioned this before, I was so crazy at that moment that the things that I would focus on, the only solution, excuse me, that I could see through all of that was death. It was almost like I felt the truth of the affair coming out was absolutely inconceivable to me. Therefore, the only way out of it was I felt like I had to die or somebody else had to die, but it could never be exposed. And so when you live within a shame-based system where honesty feels not optional to you, and I'm not saying it, and that's crazy thinking, by the way, I'm not condoning that thinking, then certainly you'll try to manage the affair. And if the affair partner is threatening to tell, I've had many people who've been very afraid to do something and to break off the affair for fear of the ramifications. As a matter of fact, I'm working with one poor guy right now who really I feel was kind of blackmailed for a long time. She threatened to do stuff, and finally he just said, I'm done. And currently, she actually brought trumped up some criminal charges against him. And, you know, I've got another guy who has been harassed for the last year and a half, almost like fatal attraction. I've got a woman who's been stalked, and we've had the police involved by the affair partner. And not that in all three of those cases, they're not glad. I mean, they were all glad that they terminated the relationship. But, you know, it's been incredibly difficult because of, you know, what their perceived notion of what the other person would do, at least in those cases, was true. You know, they literally became incredibly vindictive. And so that can happen in situations. And if you're not willing to walk in the light and you're not in recovery, then certainly there can be a fear of addressing it, coming clean. And I think in other cases, if the other person is threatening, it just gives you an excuse to continue on. But if someone's really shame-based, then you can bet that particular threat carries some sort of weight for them. Next question. My maid is telling me about the first time he cheated on me with his affair partner. He said it felt a lot like being doomed, upset, panicked, and I was what he was thinking about. He said it wasn't like a dual side, one side sexual desire, her, but the other side feeling disgusted. He said it was always only negative and that he was never sexually attracted or wanted to have sex with anyone but me during the affair. And again, this points to a very deep sense of punishment, question mark. There are a lot of people who do cutting, people abuse themselves in lots of pretty profound ways. Sometimes they sabotage themselves in their careers because it feels they enjoy the success, but it feels like they don't deserve it. Sometimes they punish themselves by burning themselves, by cutting themselves. Self-punishment, self-inflicted failure, self-inflicted, you know, things that are going to blow up your life. There certainly is a place psychologically that people come to where they feel like it's what they deserve, and that almost becomes a motivating factor. Now, is that at one level somewhat, is that crazy? I mean, when you think about people who become abusive and cut themselves, I mean, how do you feel about that? What do you think about those people? Why do they end up doing that sort of thing? But at one level, at that moment, it takes away, I think, in a very strange way, it numbs things out. It's a behavior, whether it's cutting, whether it's however it's self-abusive, it somehow numbs it. And that's a strange process. And again, going back to the book, Parenting from Within, I think it may give you some ideas of ways to look at it. After trying to understand my spouse's affair, I feel sad for him, crazy as it may sound, but I guess in most normal affairs, the unfaithful one has a positive experience that are followed by negative consequences that turn out not to be worth giving into their desire, lust, infatuation, attraction. What do you think about me feeling really sad? Excuse me. What do you think about me feeling really sad for my spouse, knowing that he didn't have any of this but was unfaithful as a way to hurt himself and to prove the negative self-beliefs he brought in from his childhood? It was as if the more happy and loved he was with me, the more self-destructive his actions became, with the intent of proving what he believed about himself, that he was unlovable. He doesn't deserve to be happy and he's worthless, etc. All messages from his parents then reinforced by the negative childhood experience. Right. Again, I think those are just incredibly tragic situations when that sort of thing begins to happen to someone. It just makes me hurt a great deal for him. Let's see. And one last question, it looks like. Here we go. Is it normal after months full disclosure to feel triggered by the holidays? I can answer that absolutely. I think that holidays are one of the most difficult times and also one of the best times. I mean, it's a both. The two of you can experience things that are totally new and thrilling, and at the same time you can experience pain that's quite disturbing. Over Thanksgiving, I felt really upset about my mate's affair and wondered if that is normal. Right. Well, and part of the reason is holidays to us really represent a time of family, a time of rejoicing. They're supposed to be a happy time. And you may have noticed at times if you've been the hurt spouse and sometimes even the unfaithful spouse, if you see a couple walking along that's really happy and that are doing really well together, or so it seems as you view them from the outside, that triggers a flood of emotions that suddenly you begin to experience the trauma. Now, what you're experiencing, I think, at that point is the grief of not having the relationship that you always wanted. And that grief, it does, it hurts. And so holidays can serve as a trigger, especially, I think, within the first couple of years of discovery. You know, my hope would be, and for everyone that listens to this, during the holidays that you begin to make the new moments and new memories and new places to celebrate, new traditions, always new traditions. You know, I love, I think Stephanie and I both love some of the traditions that begin to come into place after everything was said and done. Things that represented us, a way of reestablishing a new sense of we that became a part of our story as we began to look at this and try to make sense of all of this. it became a point of celebration. But certainly, I think when you're still fairly close to ground zero, holidays and what they represent to us will serve as a trigger. So again, my encouragement would be as you go through this holidays or through these holidays, please try to make new traditions and enjoy one another. So that wraps up our time for the day. I want to thank everybody for joining the call, and I look forward to talking to you all next week. And everybody be careful as you go through the holiday season. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.